You're listening to Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM. This is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. To be a part of our program, dial toll-free 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Then you can talk to our hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is a Thursday morning, and we're glad that you decided to join us for Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. This is Tony Bean, Vice President for Student Life and Christian Worldview. And that would be at North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference. Here's Hannah Miller. She's the co-host.
Outspokenly opinionated and unashamedly conservative. This is Hannah Miller, informed and unafraid.
So, assuming DSS is not listening, did you drug your kids last night? Make them
sleep? Actually,
just kidding.
I was going to say thank you, and thank you to our listeners. I don't know what you said yesterday, but Ruth woke up. She's been waking up in the middle of the night for the last four nights now. And then yesterday, we were awake from 1 to almost 5. So I was texting her. I was like, I can't do it. I can't drive almost an hour and for the third night in a row. And then last night, we did sleep till 3. Praise the Lord. We got 2 more hours.
That's good.
And so I'm feeling a lot better today. I don't know. Her doctor, Dr. Papa, is on his way back to the States, so I'm excited.
Yes, it's time for Dr. Papa to come home from India.
That's right. All right. You got to come doctor my kids now and tell me what's going on. But I just think we're going through some sleep regression, like I said the other day. So there's not much you can do about it.
Gosh.
Just try to muscle through and just figure it out. But they've actually, my husband has what's called restless leg syndrome.
Yes.
And they think that she has it, but it's harder to diagnose in kids that age because they just can't communicate. But they think that that's what it is, and they're trying to consider what to do to help. So, we'll see.
Your husband probably never needs to hear the commercial that Rush Limbaugh does. It's a parody commercial about restless leg syndrome. He actually starts a school of tap dance for restless leg syndrome. So anyway, he makes fun of that, and that's bad for people who really suffer from it because it's real.
Well, it is. Dustin will take the medication for it, and he'll sleep for 5 hours, and it'll be the best sleep he's ever gotten. But he's like, "But I only sleep 5 hours," He'll wake up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and he's ready to go. And Ruth is now the same way because they've gotten her on some sort of a pediatric version of the restless leg medicine. So, but then she'll 5 hours later, she'll be awake at 2 o'clock, and then at 8 o'clock she'll crash. And she'll want to sleep for a couple or for more out, for longer. And so it's obvious, her body's not getting what it needs, but it's waking her up.
Well, it sounds to me like you got the perfect solution for you since your husband and your daughter are on the same sleep cycle.
Right.
You just stay in the bed and let him do it.
I'm like, all right, see you later.
Yeah.
No. Well, he's actually off the medicine right now. So he sleeps like a dead person, and I'm up all night with the kids. So, then I'm like, "All right, buddy, I gotta get out of here," because then I have to leave, and so he'll take over.
All right. Well, I thought we'd start out today with something a little lighthearted.
Okay.
Cut number one. You may wonder, gee, what are the most popular dogs in America? And so we thought we would answer that question for you. Here we go.
The Labrador Retriever, for 27 years running, still top dog in the U.S.
Wow.
According to Pure Breed Popularity Rankings just released for 2017, German Shepherds and Golden Retrievers remain in second and third spots. But it's French Bulldogs, according to the American Kennel Club, which show the most upward mobility. The bat-eared pups with short snouts jumping in popularity from 76th place to 4th in just 20 years. And among these celebrity Frenchie owners, Lady Gaga, Chrissy Teigen and husband John Legend, and the late Carrie Fisher's Gary even had a cameo in The Last Jedi. Lillian Wu, Fox News.
I can't imagine a better reason to not have one of those dogs than that Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga.
I don't know. I don't want Lady Gaga's dog. French bulldog?
They're the ones with the smushed nose.
All bulldogs have.
Right, but they're they're usually like a smaller, a typical bulldog is big and wide and stocky and short. These are more slender.
No, they're little bitty things.
Yeah.
I mean,
like the
small.
Running of the bulldogs in the Geico commercials.
Is that a French bulldog?
I'm thinking maybe.
I don't think so.
Because
this is a French bulldog.
Right.
Got up here.
So.
So, okay. Well, I didn't know what they were. So
yeah, they're smaller.
Learn something new every day. I want to talk about this, too. Cut number four, Roseanne did a reboot. And I was going to talk about this yesterday, but I just didn't get to it. And it's turned into an incredible hit. Here we go.
The reboot of Roseanne delivered for ABC and for America.
They kept everything exactly the same as it was when you guys were kids.
It's a decorating choice called poverty.
Back-to-back half-hour episodes drew 17.7 million viewers in the coveted demo of adults 18 to 49. The second episode at 8:30 rose even higher to 18.6 million. Between the two, Roseanne averaged 18.2 million viewers. Equally impressive is the show's return was up 10% from the 1997 finale, and it scored the highest rating Tuesday night in broadcast television in 6 years and ABC's best result in the time slot since 2006, according to EW.com. Michelle Polino, Fox News.
Do you want to know why that it worked?
Well, go ahead, tell me.
Well, I mean, why do you think?
Well, I read about it, so I know the answer.
Well,
I cheated, right, I guess.
It'll be interesting. I haven't read the answer, so I'm going to tell you why I think it works.
Okay.
And then you tell me if that's it. Yeah.
On why it shouldn't be working, because it is. What you're about to say is true, and I'm going to say why it shouldn't be, but go ahead.
Well, the reason it's working is because you actually have a character, the main character, who is somewhat conservative and a Trump supporter, pushing back against a whole host of progressives. And so Americans don't care. I mean, they don't mind so much seeing progressive thoughts as long as there's somebody in the room that kind of pulls it back down to earth again.
Well, and doesn't look like an idiot, because, you know, they typically try to portray the conservative, the Christian, the Trump supporter as just a big dummy who doesn't know what they're talking about, and they have no facts to support what they say. And that's why a lot of them, they do like this, because there's been some pushback. The only problem is if you've actually watched them, which I did not, and you did not, but I did read about them, and they're talking a lot about how essentially there's Roseanne is in full support of her 6 or 9 year old nephew who cross dresses, and there's some other social issues in there that she's obviously very liberal about.
Sure.
And I read through the comments though on an article that I was reading about it, and there was everybody over and over again was we don't care. Like this is why Roseanne is doing so well, is because essentially these people were saying we don't care about the social issues, we care about the economy, and we care about immigration. And so with immigration and with economy, they line up conservatively with Donald Trump, so to speak. But on the issues like abortion and same-sex marriage and et cetera, they don't care.
Everybody's on the same page.
Right, because they were just like, who cares if a 9-year-old boy wears a dress? Who cares who loves who? And that kind of thing. Let you be you and I'll be me. And so that's where, in the social issues, they're very liberal, which is where Roseanne is at. She's lining up with Trump on the economic issues, on the immigration issues, but on the social
she's
issues.
She's lining up with Trump on homosexuality, because Trump is very liberal when it comes to homosexuality.
And that's where a lot of people apparently are, according to the responses that I read. And so we shouldn't be, as conservatives, those who are conservatives through and through, we can't run around and be like, Roseanne, that we love the show, because there are some holes in her conservatism.
Well, let me be clear that I'm not cheerleading for Roseanne. I'm simply saying it works, or why it has so many people that
watch it.
Right,
but you're exactly
right. Because people are, Last Man Standing was a conservative show that was pretty conservative through and through. Most of the people on the show, now you had a few foils that were progressives, but you had, essentially, you had the main character and his wife that had a pretty typically conservative marriage, and their kids were more progressive, which is true. And it was funny. The dialogue was funny, and people liked it, and they canceled it. And the reason they canceled it is because they didn't want. I mean, it's pretty much established now that Last Man Standing went away because of its conservative ideology that was being put out there, because the ratings were really good. I mean, it was winning its time slot. It was a top five show, and they refused to renew it anyway. So Roseanne, I guess the way they're going to get away with this, because this is ABC, is what you said about, they're going to let her be very socially liberal, and they don't care so much. I mean, they don't like Trump, but they don't mind raking in the money and the ratings as long as that's the only thing. If they can stay on the social liberal side of things,
I mean, they can't sell out. Hollywood can't sell out on the homosexual issue or the abortion issue, which are both, you know, throughout Roseanne, and she supports those things, and she even talks about considering an abortion at one point, or et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And those are the holy grails in Hollywood. And so you could say whatever you want, I think, regarding Trump or the economy and immigration.
They don't like it.
They don't like it.
Because
but you can't,
they hate him.
Right. But you can't let go of homosexuality and abortion. They're on a whole nother level for Hollywood.
Yeah, somewhat, for some reason, they're comparing this to All in the Family. And I just don't think it really has any relationship to All in the Family. Well, I know you never watched All in the Family, but I mean, I grew up watching All in the Family.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I haven't seen Roseanne, so I guess I need to leave that alone, other than what I've read about it and people trying to make the comparison. You know, I just don't think that works. Archie Bunker and Roseanne Barr are very different characters. The whole premise of that show was different. So, but anyway, there you go. If I have no intention. I didn't watch it the first time around, and I'm not going to watch it. Now I'm going to waste my time. If I want to sit down and be entertained, I'd rather not have my values undermined every 5 minutes. So that's why it's probably not going to do anything for me. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. We'll come back in 3 minutes and talk about gerrymandering. Yep, it's a Supreme Court case out of Maryland that could have a strong impact on the midterm elections. We'll tell you about it when we return.
And here's your host, not only Hannah Miller, but also Dr. Tony Beam.
All right, welcome back, everybody. This is Tony Beam.
This is Hannah Miller.
And gerrymandering has become a big deal. It's been a big deal for a long time, but the courts are now taking a look at it for the first time, particularly the Supreme Court, to see if it's something that's going to be allowed. For those of you who don't know what it is, it's actually quite simple. Gerrymandering is what happens is state legislatures have the ability to draw voting districts. And when Republicans rule, they draw voting districts in a way that brings in neighborhoods, because we can now test these things. We know where the concentration of conservatives or Republicans live versus Democrats. Mm-hmm. So they'll redraw the neighborhood, their areas, the voting districts, to favor Republicans.
So if they have if they tend to have not enough votes for Republicans in a certain district, they'll redraw a neighborhood that they know has conservative values into that district to try to bring in conservative votes.
I think I just said that, didn't I?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was saying it again.
Yeah, that was good. The way you restated
it.
Yes. So anyway.
But this is about Maryland.
Yes, it's about Maryland because gerrymandering is one of those things that you do it and you're kind of quiet about it. I mean, you might go in the back room and, you know, tell your fellow Republicans, okay, we've got the reins of power now. We're going to bring in some Republican voters and we're going to. But you don't come out and just announce
and just say it
in front of God and everybody.
I mean, everybody knows why they do it.
Pretty much.
But you're not supposed to come out and say.
It is not kosher or proper
kosher.
For the, you know, officials to just go to the microphone and say, okay, we're going to redraw this district because we want to crush the Republicans. They've been winning in this district for 30 years. Which is essentially what happened in this district. Republicans have been winning for years by 28 points. I mean, it was never close. So Democrats got a hold of it. They redrew the district, and Democrats won by 21 points. So, and it was such a dramatic shift in 1 year that it really caught the attention of, well, a lot of people.
I mean, I would assume it would be totally different if the numbers had dwindled and then Democrats kind of snagged it with a few extra points. But to go from 28 to 21 is a big swing.
Yeah, that's a 49-point swing in the space of a year. All right, here's a story from Fox News. This is cut number 7. Supreme Court sounded a little bit skeptical about what Maryland did, so there's a possibility that this could be a win for Republicans. Here we go.
Justices appeared bothered by Maryland lawmakers' redrawing of a congressional district to favor Democrats. Justice Elena Kagan saying lawmakers were pretty upfront about creating another Democratic district. But in arguments, justices also struggled with a remedy for political gerrymandering and openly questioned how to judge when it goes too far. It's the second case this term dealing dealing with political gerrymandering. Justices have not yet ruled on a case heard 6 months ago dealing with state legislative districts in Wisconsin. In Washington, Jared Halpern, Fox News.
If the Supreme Court were to rule in Republicans' favor, then the district would have to be redrawn the way it was before the Democrats, or at least drawn in a much more fair way. And then this would have an effect on the Wisconsin district as well, because they would it would have to be redrawn, and it was drawn in favor of Republicans.
What about Pennsylvania?
Well, the Pennsylvania case that pretty much is going to stay, simply because in Pennsylvania, it was much, 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 much more subtle. Look, mm-hmm. nobody denies that politics are involved in the creating of congressional districts, but there are limits. See, that's what the Supreme Court is trying to decide. What constitutes going beyond the limit? Nobody is going to argue that, well, if you're a Republican legislature, the states have the right to draw the congressional districts. They're gonna lean toward Republicans. But if you go in and draw some kind of convoluted looking map to the point that you're just going out of your way to make sure that a Republican can't win in that district, that's what the Supreme mm-hmm. Court's kind of uncomfortable with. In Pennsylvania, they were subtle. It was not major changes, but it was enough to make it competitive. In Maryland, we just told you, 28% Republican win, 21% Democrat win when the gerrymandering took place. And in Wisconsin's not as bad as Maryland, but it's worse than Pennsylvania. So it's kind of in the middle. So we don't know. It's very likely that the Supreme Court is going to say, okay, Maryland, you can't do this. But we don't know how they're going to provide, what guidelines are going to provide. See, the Supreme Court can't just come out and tell mm-hmm. Maryland, you did this, and now you got to fix it.
Well, that was going to be my question. What are they going to do?
Well, they're going to say they've got to set some kind of limits.
Right. I mean, they could rule in Republicans' favor in this moment, but...
But they're going to have to, and that's what they're struggling with. How do what limitations are we going to put on gerrymandering? We know it's going to continue, but how far is too far? And I think one of the reasons the court took this Maryland case is because this was obviously too far, and it gives them an opportunity to set the boundaries. Mm-hmm. But even then, you know, the states are going to argue that this is a complete states' rights issue, that every state has the right under the Constitution to set up its congressional districts. But the mitigating factor is for the Supreme Court is that you can't do it in such a way that it rigs the elections for infinity, mm-hmm. which is what they're trying. I mean, that's what's happening and what happened in Maryland. It happened in Pennsylvania. There doesn't mm-hmm. seem to be much of an opportunity for those districts to get redrawn. So the court's going to have to come out and say, okay, here you go. Here's how far you can gerrymander. When your party is in the majority, you can put your thumb on the scale a little bit and make it lean toward your party, but you can't completely rip the map up and turn the district upside down mm-hmm. to win for the other party. So who right. knows what that limit will be.
Yeah. Well, that'll be interesting to see, because I don't even know how they would, I guess, try to control that.
Well, you could look at percentages, I guess. You could say, I mean, for example, the Maryland case. You could say if a district has been redrawn to the point that it's a 49% swing in a year, mm-hmm. then that's over the limit. You look, what did they do to the map? Ask the mm-hmm. question. What did they do to that congressional district to make that work? And then find a way to say how many if you're going to gerrymander, how many neighborhoods can you
right.
pull
you
in?
Right, you can limit only two neighborhoods you can bring, or whatever. Or, I don't know what the numbers would be.
Exactly. I don't either. You know. But to me, that's what they would have to do. Mm-hmm. So the court seems, like we said, when the arguments were made, you can tell by the way the court asked questions. I mean, Elena Kagan just came out yesterday and said, well, golly. I mean, basically, you know, look, you guys advertised that you were going to rip this district up so it would be Democrat. So we got a problem here. But so I think they're going to rule that this can't stand. It's just going to be interesting to see what they do let stand and how they set the parameters. All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. When we come back, I'm going to give you an example of how sick our culture is. Now, maybe you don't need this, and you probably don't need to hear it, but I you've got to know what's happening now with Nicholas Cruz. Stay with us. We'll be back in a minute.
And here are your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Beam.
All right, welcome back. Before we get into this, this is Tony Beam, by the way.
This is Hannah Miller.
Before we get into this sleazy story that I feel like I'm going to have to go have a steam bath after we talk about it, we were talking about dogs in the first segment today. The most popular and most popular dog is a Labrador. Then it's German Shepherds and Golden Retrievers and right on some French Bulldogs, like fourth from... It has moved up in the last 20 years. So anyway, I thought we'd throw this story out before we talk about Cruz. Just that this is crazy stuff here.
Yeah.
PETA says you can't be a feminist and buy a dog.
It's because if you buy a dog from a breeder, you're funding sexual exploitation.
They're basically sex slave trade.
Right. And breeders are pimps, essentially, and they just are making money by exploiting the bodies of these dogs over and over and over again. So
people,
there you have it.
These people are completely insane.
Look.
And if we allow them to run our country philosophically, I mean, we'll just eventually just dry up and blow away because we'll be so bereft of any intellectual content that our brains will shrivel up and we won't even be able to get out of bed in the morning. That's how bad this thinking really is.
Well, and it's for me, I mean, I've known this for a while because I breed Yorkies. So, you know, you have to tread carefully. I have to tread carefully when I tell people that because of this. Because I've gotten backlash from, you know, being, and of course I'm not like, I don't have 18 dogs at my house that I'm breeding. I got one. You know, we got another one. We might breed her. So it's kind of like, you know, we just enjoy it. My kids love raising puppies. I love training them and working with them. It's just a thing we do as a family.
Yeah.
So, look, there's a big difference between a puppy mill and a respectable breeder who has ethics, loves their dogs.
Absolutely.
You know, all of that. And there's some people that need to be doing it. And the reason is, and I'll tell you why I got into it, is because I've had dogs that I adopted from a shelter. I've had animals that I took in from others and that kind of thing. And the reason I didn't do it after I had children of my own is because I wanted to know every bit of that animal's history.
Sure.
Because the animals that I had before often had histories and went out without kids in the home. I could deal with it. I could deal with a dog that sometimes displayed aggressive behavior. I could handle all of that, but I don't want it around my kids. And a year and a half ago, my husband and I put down my dog that I'd had for years because of this. I mean, he couldn't handle having a child in the home. He came from an abusive past. And that's where a lot of dogs in a shelter have questions about their pet. Not all of them. Some of them, you know exactly what their history is.
Well, if you were a dog, would you want to be owned by a feminist? I mean, I think we ought to poll dogs across America and see if they're happy going into a feminist home. And I think if they're not, then this ought to be a ban. We ought to just agree with it. The idea that there's no difference between a breeder and a puppy mill is insane. Our beagle, I'll just go ahead and tell you, he's 12 years old now, 12, 13, I don't know. He's an old dog. but he came from a puppy mill. And I didn't know I'd never bought a dog from anything. I just saw an ad in the paper. And my father-in-law wanted a dog. He wanted a beagle. Because Denise ran over the last one. It was an accident.
Poor Denise.
But anyway, I just said, okay, it's over in this particular, they gave me the address, and I went over there, and you got two beagles running around the front yard. And I'm going, look at those beagles, they're cute. And then I go down behind the house, and there are these cages. And I mean, it was awful. There were dogs stacked in these cages, puppies. And I'm thinking, well, I'm here. I can get one of them out of this.
Right,
so I'm just going to go ahead and...
You're rescuing them out of the puppy mill.
I'm going to rescue one of these animals. And Toby's had a good life, believe me.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and got Toby. And we were fortunate that Toby was not, you know, didn't turn into a...
Well, and a lot of them that come from puppy mills have genetic issues. Like, a lot of genetic issues.
So. Well, Toby's... Now, here's the thing. Toby is a full... You know, you can breed the some of the beagleness out of a beagle. The hunting dog. I mean, his natural instinct is to get his nose on the ground like a hound dog.
Right.
Because Elvis was right. I mean, right. he ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time.
It's not been bred out of him, huh?
When he gets his nose down on the ground, I mean, he makes the sound that's otherworldly. And when he starts making that sound, it's because he's on the scent of something.
Yep.
And of course, he has anxiety. He does. I don't know if this is a part of being in a puppy mill, but he has anxiety separation issues. So that when we come home, you know, we can't shut him up for about 5 minutes. He sounds like somebody's cutting his heart out. And so it drives me crazy. But so I would never. But this feminist stuff, this PETA, you can't. It's sex trafficking.
Look,
I mean, please.
There's an appropriate time. You know, I adopted when I could. Then I decided that I didn't want to do that again with children in the home. But I'm not saying I wouldn't ever do it again.
You know,
I think
a lot of these you know, breeders, they make you sign a contract.
Yeah.
And then they follow up. They do an in-home visit to come and see if you're. You know, you're really going to treat the dog right.
And we have contracts that we send out for whether you're going to breed them or not. You have to guarantee that you're not going to, and you know, and that kind of thing. Because we don't want our dogs just going out and being bred willy-nilly and turned into...
Right. But I got news for you. Somebody tells me they want to do a home visit before they'll let me take a dog.
Usually we do like a vet reference. You know, I'm like, hey, if you have any other pets, I'd like to know if you have a regular vet.
Okay.
And if you do.
We do.
You know, yeah.
We have the most expensive vet in the world.
Do
you? Yes. They're very good. They're very thorough. And they have lots of my money. So I'm sure that breeders would like that a lot. All right. Austin's on the phone. Hello, Austin.
Good morning, Gatsby. Good morning, Hannah. I actually also have a beagle, so I know exactly the story you're describing. You just described my life.
Yeah.
But I was just hoping maybe in the future sometime that all progressives would be so coherent in their worldview. And because whenever you do take them out there to their to the logical extension of their belief system, it becomes this ridiculous.
Yeah.
And just by way of example, my brother, who lives in Portland, Oregon, is very progressive, and he says, I kind of cornered him one time, and I said, so let me understand you exactly. You are against capital punishment, is that correct? He said, yes, absolutely, that's the taking of an innocent life, or of a potentially innocent life. And I said, but you are for abortion on demand. And he said, absolutely. I said, so basically you're for letting the innocent go free and killing the innocent, letting the guilty go free. And he kind of paused for a minute, and he said, well, I never really thought about it like that. You know, and it, of course, it didn't change his mind, but I was just pointing out the logical extension and the hypocrisy and inconsistency. So I'm actually kind of happy for PETA, and you know, I wish every other progressive would follow their lead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
being honest about where everything leads.
If we can spare nice puppies from having to go live with a feminist, that's probably a good thing for the world. We're probably making the world a better place. So anyway, Austin, thanks. I don't know if feminists would be good pet owners. I mean, maybe, but I can just imagine anybody who's a radical feminist, it just seems to me, would do something to an animal. I don't know. That's probably a terrible thought.
Trying to think of if I know a radical feminist
who has a dog. Yeah.
No, I think they're cat people.
See,
actually,
most of them probably because of the hats. They wear the hats.
Oh gosh!
I love dogs. I'm a big. I do. I wouldn't mind having another dog after Toby's gone. And Denise just yelled at the radio. Yes, honey. I heard that.
Maybe not a hound dog.
Well, she never wants another dog in the house. I can tell you that.
Oh, get a non-shedding.
Yeah, get a what?
One that doesn't shed.
Well, yeah, Toby does shed.
I know.
He's a short-haired dog. I thought
short-haired dogs are shed. They all shed except for the ones that are like Yorkies. Yorkies don't shed. They do some, but, minuscule.
Yeah.
I never.
Well, the thing about Toby, he climbs up on the back of the couch, and then it sags. You have to come and beat the cushion back into shape and vacuum. We have this little vacuum. Well, we vacuum his hair up
You have to have a method before they get even welcome into your home. We decided before we had dogs, I was like, no, they always go in the crate at night. They always go in the crate when we're gone, and they're not allowed on any of the furniture in the whole home.
Well, we put him in the crate when we leave.
Yeah.
But he's free to be up on the couch when we're at home because he wants He just, and you can't put him in the crate at night if we're going to sleep.
Right.
I mean, because he howls and hollers all night. So yeah.
There's a transition and there's a training period that has to go on. But yeah, but we're home most of the time, or I am. So the dogs aren't in the crates a lot, but.
Do you know they'll actually cut the vocal cords of a dog? I mean, you can take them. Yes.
Yeah,
look at Gary over there. You can take them and they'll just snip the little thing. And then he'll be like, you know, he'll be barking, but he won't make
any
sound.
Sad.
And we discussed that. And I said, no, we're not going to mutilate the dog. I just can't.
I mean,
one of my
fondest memories is, you know, in the middle of the night, my dad always had beagles. You would hear them on our 40-acre farm because it echoed, you know, to come off the water. And they'd be on to something's trail in the middle of the night. And it'd be, just all through the farm. And you could hear it all night long.
It's a sound that.
Like no
not,
other.
It cannot be reproduced.
No, it can't.
All right, we'll take a break and come back. All right, we'll get to Nicholas Cruz. I didn't get to him.
This was a fun story.
It was a fun story. There's going to be a lot of fun stories today because there's not a lot of stuff out there. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay with us.
Here are your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Beam.
This is Tony Beam.
This is Hannah Miller.
And tomorrow, Hannah will not be here because Gary and I are going to do our Good Friday radio show, which is we're going to talk about, in the first hour, we'll talk about the crucifixion and play a lot of music to go along with it. And tomorrow's show is going to be mostly music, but there'll be commentary along with it. And then the second hour, we'll talk about the resurrection, and we'll play music that kind of goes along with the resurrection. That's something we've done for a lot of years, kind of traditional. So we'll do that tomorrow. And I told Hannah, I said, you're welcome to come in, but she was going to have some child care things
tomorrow
anyway.
Yeah, the child care facility's closed on Good Friday.
Next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, it'll be Hannah and Corey because I'll be in Memphis. I may call in, give a report, talk about what's going on, the MLK 50 celebration and all that. So I'm looking forward to being up there. I don't really have time to do it, but hey, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
All right. This is a disturbing story to me. I mean, age does make a difference. I would like to believe that as I get older, I don't get more astounded or stunned by things. You know, I want to kind of stay in the zone of knowing what's going on and not getting all sidetracked with story. But I got to tell you, this story makes my skin crawl. Nicholas Cruz, who is the shooter from down in Florida. I mean, there's no question. It's not like there's any question about his innocence or guilt. He did it. I mean, he was apprehended with the weapon, the whole thing. But these women are now sending him love letters in prison and sexually explicit photos. Here's the story. This is cut number 9. It's coming from Fox News today. And then we'll fill in a few gaps with a couple of other things. But here we go.
Some women have been sending sexually suggestive photos to Nicholas Cruz, the accused gunman allegedly behind the killing of 17 people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida. The Sun Sentinel is reporting one woman from Texas professed her love to Cruz in a letter covered with smiley faces. Yet another sent him photos of her in a bikini. Other apparent fans have sent him about $800 for his prison commissary account. But prison officials screen all letters to inmates, and he hasn't been allowed to see them. He's still under suicide watch. Jill Nato, Fox News.
The ones they do let him see, he's been getting some letters from people who are concerned about his soul and are praying for him to come to God. The prison officials will actually let him see those. The letters that are from family or legitimate, they let him see. But these sexually explicit pictures
and the love
letters, all that kind of thing. They're screening all that stuff out. So,
let me tell you where
I have no idea. Look, this is so creepy to me that I'm going to go take a shower while Hannah talks about it.
I can guarantee you that every single of the women that's sending him the sexual explicit pictures and letters and all of that partakes in erotic fiction. Because that romanticizing of our
erotic fiction. Wait, you're talking about books?
Yeah, I'm talking about books.
Magazines and stuff.
And the women's porn is what that is. What they call mommy porn. But is some of that stuff is really hard. And it has sucked a lot of these women in, and a lot of it really romanticizes our felons and romanticizes what they've done and how they got there. And a lot of these books have build relationships between women on the outside and men on the inside. And they describe these men as being these great alpha men, which, you know, according to our culture now, feminists say we can't want, but these women do want. And so in a twisting of all of that, in a twisting of God's design, we run to the perverted version, which is this right here.
Yeah. So is this bathroom reading for you? I mean,
no.
Is that what we're talking about?
No, but oh, okay. With the outset of, I guess it was the 50 Shades of Grey and some other material and some things that went on in some friends' lives, I started doing a lot of research on it and doing just some.
Well, now it's interesting. Mental health experts have weighed in on this. So I'd like to see. Yeah, I want to see what you think about what they say.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to hear what they say.
Well, they say there's two characteristics that would be consistent for these women. Mm-hmm. One is they have little or no relationship with their fathers. In other words, mm-hmm. there's no male figure mm-hmm. in their life that has taught them anything about relationships as it relates to men and women. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is that they're trying to mother this guy. In other words, the poor,
poor, unfortunate soul,
they believe they're the ones that can rescue him mm-hmm. and pull him mm-hmm. back from the brink of insanity and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So what's your response to that?
Well, first of all, that's not the kind of mothering that, you know, wow, what a way to pervert mothering, because that's not.
Well, mothering in the sense that they think they can rescue him.
Right.
So they're
okay.
not in the sense that like a mom.
Right.
But in the sense of the same, the instinct that says to a troubled soul that I'm the one who can rescue them. And mm-hmm. then, of course, you add
well,
in this perverted sexuality stuff, and then they
right.
think that's part of it.
Right. So. And I can kind of see where maybe they're going with that aspect of it, where because women do have a driving desire to help and to nurture. And when we see things like this, we do want to jump in whenever we see hurting and we see pain. And if that's the way that they see it, okay. But they're definitely perverting how that should be done. And again, I don't know. I stand by what I said because I think it probably comes to me.
Oh, I'm not arguing with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no, I know you're not.
I don't know. I don't agree.
And I don't know. I'd like to read more about what the psychologist would say about all of that. But I can. I know that there's a large demographic who read the erotic literature and take that kind of thing in. And this is very the instincts and the behaviors that you see in felons are a lot of times glorified and romanticized in that literature. And then they specifically go to men who are in prison. And they create these relationships between them. And it's all very disturbing.
So are the men in these erotic novels, are all of them the bad boys? In other words, are there not any, I guess, what we would call good guys, normal guys that a woman or a young girl would
well,
see
sometimes
with
there's
good
a,
characteristics?
A guy who's really innocent who just was found guilty.
Yeah.
You know, there was a bad situation. Sometimes there's that happens, you know, a miscarriage of justice kind of situation where he ends up being the good guy. He just happens to be a felon. And I don't really have a problem with that. But then there's the stories where he really is a felon. He really has done some bad things.
Yeah.
He really is the bad guy.
Right.
And that they, you know, somehow they twist it and they manipulate it into having you think that, oh, it just wasn't all his fault. He had no choice but to do what he did.
So he becomes sort of a romantic figure because he's
right.
a bad boy.
Right, and he's kind of been victimized. And,
well,
of course, that comes into that woman's instinct of wanting to aid the victim. And so then you...
What is the... You know, I remember The Breakfast Club.
Okay.
I saw that movie.
Right, right.
You know what I'm talking about, the
movie? I forced myself
to watch it.
It's a horrible movie. I don't understand why people like it, but I made myself watch it because it's such
a
classic.
It is
a
classic.
Considered a classic.
I
don't know.
You know, there's... But in that movie, one of the characters falls for the bad boy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously
the stereotypical bad boy.
And so it seems there... I don't understand that. I just don't understand what it is in a woman that makes them want to be drawn to the rebel, the bad guy, the guy that's going to be in the face of everybody Instead of being drawn to somebody who's a good person.
I think it's in part our fallen nature.
Well, yeah.
You know, is a big part of that. And there's also this, in our culture, we have stamped out aggressive behavior in men. We've stamped out, oh goodness, we're about out of time. How much time we got? 10 seconds.
All right. Well,
so it's just, they're trying to find it somewhere.
Yeah.
And they go to the bad guys to get it.
Well, I'm glad you understand that. I'll just be honest, and I'm totally in the dark about it. I can't even. It's just beyond
my
comprehension.
This is a big topic, but
I'm such a good guy. I've never been around stuff like that. Here's Fox.